Lucas on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life. I'm Jeff Lucas. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio, and it's that time of the year again when the question is frequently asked, have you made any New Year resolutions? Usually, at the end of a year, we bid a glad farewell to the previous 12 months and we look hopefully towards a better season when the sky will be bluer, when we will be more prosperous, healthier, experience greater joy, and for the follower of Jesus, live closer in our walk with him and influence our world positively for his kingdom. So tonight, thinking about resolutions, I'd like to introduce us to three people who might nudge us to be more thoughtful and creative as we think about 2025. The trio are Mabel, a lady who plays piano on Sunday mornings at our church, even though she only has one hand. Then there's Jonathan, a pastor from a church across town, who turned a man who seemed like an enemy of the church into a friend. And then there's Marge. I've talked about Marge here before, but she was so amazing. She welcomed a menacing-looking gangster into a Sunday morning service and quietly brought revolution to his life. He was never the same again. So we're thinking about New Year's resolutions. I'm Jeff Lucas. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. It was one of those Christian gatherings that felt like a cheerleading session. The preacher was working up a serious sweat as he dashed around the platform, his bald head rather shiny. We need an army of people who will rise up in the knowledge that through Christ we can do anything, anything, he bellowed. The enthusiastic congregation, apparently unconcerned about this red-faced minister's blood pressure, roared their approval, amens echoing around the building. As sometimes happens during these occasions, something was worrying me, but now the pesky question marks had morphed into an alarm bell. The theme of his message was that frequently misquoted statement of Paul's, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We read it in Philippians 4:13. It's a text that adorns many Christian refrigerators and is often quoted by believing athletes. But here's the thing. I can't do anything, and neither can you. I can't give birth to twins, play the bassoon, speak Cantonese, or fly without a ticket. And the preacher who said we could do anything can't. He's unable to dash around without perspiring, preach without yelling, or perm his hair, seeing as there's a shortage of it. I can do anything that Jesus calls me to do, because he will equip me for that calling. But that does not mean a life with no limits. On the contrary, Paul penned those words to the Philippians while he was stuck in prison. And so during that season, he couldn't do anything, including popping out for a stroll. And it's a good idea to know what we should not do. I used to lead worship until the blessed day when a faithful friend gently informed me that the Christian church would breathe a huge sigh of relief if I would just hang up my guitar forever. All of that said, recently, I've been inspired by Mabel, a sprightly, beautiful 87-year-old member of our congregation. We met for a chat recently. Lovely Mabel has a smile that can light up a room. She came to Jesus as a 13-year-old and quickly discovered an acute hunger for scripture. Meeting the love of her life, Ed, at Bible school, the two married and pastored churches for 3 decades and then became missionaries serving in Taiwan, Alaska, and Japan. She developed a love for music as a child when her grandfather gave her an old piano. Thousands of hours of tuition and practice have paid off. Listening to her play at church is a joy. But what makes her virtuosity so impacting is that Mabel was born with only one hand. Her right arm ends just before the elbow. She has no forearm, just tiny buds where a hand should have developed. But she said, the negatives in life have turned positive for me. Just a few years ago, after 64 years of marriage, her husband Ed passed away after a battle with cancer. He shared her can-do attitude. Don't sit around feeling sorry for yourself after I've gone, Mabel, he said to her. God has still got a lot for you to do. And so she is doing just that, and not just with her music. Mabel is a consummate encourager and prayer warrior. I got an email filled with hope and strength from her just this morning. She's also consistently kind. "I'm not extraordinary," she told me during our meeting. "I just want to glorify Jesus, and I want people to know that his word is true." When our meeting had finished, Mabel prayed for me, and after she'd left, I felt renewed, refreshed, more determined to follow Jesus all the way home. And my tenacious one-handed friend helped me to realize that I can't do anything and everything but with Jesus. I can surely do a lot more than I think. As we consider how we might live differently this coming year, let's be inspired by Mabel's tenacity and courage. May this be our primary New Year's resolution, to glorify Christ so that others will know that his word is true. That will certainly make for a happy New Year. Christians don't normally arm themselves with crowbars, at least not usually. But on a crisp autumnal day, Kathleen Folden, a truck driver, marched into our local museum in Colorado and began smashing the glass that surrounded a painting by a Stanford-based artist, Enrique Chagoya. The irate Kathleen yelled, "How can you desecrate my Lord?" as she tore into the painting. Within minutes, she was arrested and was photographed wearing a T-shirt emblazoned with a caption, "My Savior is tougher than nails." The painting targeted for the attack had caused national controversy. Fox News gave extensive coverage to the reactions from local Christians who were incensed about what they saw as a blasphemous pornographic work. And the image was certainly unsettling. Two men, one of them looking Christ-like, were engaging in a sex act. Placard-waving protesters gathered outside the museum. The artist was barraged by hundreds of vitriolic emails from outraged Christians, some of which, incredibly, included death threats. Not terribly Christian, I'm thinking. Stanford University was forced to hire security to protect the beleaguered artist. The internet was rife with Christians tagging the artist as a blasphemous jerk, together with plenty of other names. And then a local pastor in our community, Jonathan Wiggins, received an email from one of his congregation demanding that he add his voice to the protests. And so he sprung into action. After prayer, Wiggins decided to take another, riskier route. He emailed Chagoya with a warm message that could be summarized like this: "Tell me more." "I told him that I didn't want to debate him, but just hear him," said Pastor Wiggins, who leads a large growing congregation in our city. "And I let him know that whatever his response, that we as a church would be praying for him, that he would be blessed every day of his life." A remarkable series of email exchanges between the two followed, and in what was to become a developing friendship, the artist explained that the character portrayed in the work was not Jesus at all, but was an iconic portrayal of the church. His painting was a response to the outrage of the Catholic paedophile scandals, where, as he put it, the spiritual has been corrupted. Something so precious got corrupted. If the task of an artist is to confront us with the reality about the way things are, Chagoya was being faithful to his calling. The conversation continued with honesty and warmth, and the two became friends. And when Pastor Wiggins shared the email dialogue with his church with permission from Chagoya, he received a standing ovation from the congregation. Knowing that he was walking in risky territory because of the strong feelings about the painting, Pastor Wiggins had been accountable and had previously discussed his dialogue with the deacons of the church, who tearfully insisted that he was doing the right thing. Wiggins was relieved and grateful for their wholehearted support. They said, "This is what Jesus would do. Go for it." This story speaks to us when we're tempted to react rather than respond. We rush to a rant rather than reaching out for dialogue. Leaping to judgment rather than pausing to listen and understand, we damn others without dialogue. But then, when we feel that others are being spiteful, we often respond with spite. But Pastor Wiggins' example shows us that everyone has a story. That doesn't necessarily legitimate what they do or how they behave, but as we listen and offer unexpected friendship, we may come to understand why they feel as they do. The softly spoken inquiry, "Tell me more," can be an invitation that can win rather than alienate. Kathleen Folden, the crowbar-swinging lady, later explained that she'd been incensed by the painting. She was ordered to pay a large fine and sentenced to probation. She was later to set up a website explaining her actions that day. It's no longer available online. In a later statement to his congregation, Pastor Wiggins clarified his motives for reaching out to Chukwuya. "Of course," he said, "as a Christian, I'd love to see him come to Christ. But whatever his response is, I'll be proud and honored to have him as a friend for the rest of my life." And Wiggins invited the artist to create another painting, one that actually did portray Jesus and did so in a way that captures the beauty of his love. Chagoya asked the minister to offer some advice about how he should paint Jesus, and then later wrote, "I see him in the beautiful descriptions of Christ that you have sent me." A stunning portrait now hangs in the church building, a gift to the church from the artist. A lifelong friendship has been forged. An artist has discovered a new vision, not only of Jesus, but also of his church. And a congregation has learned to demonstrate resilient love, a love that is truly tougher than nails. Thank God for gracious Mr. Wiggins. New Year's resolutions? How about listening more, reacting less, showing risky kindness? Dave Brilber, I'm a new creation. As we've been thinking about New Year's resolutions, perhaps we should return again to kindness, because kindness can change the world. When Ken showed up at our church, he really caused quite a stir. Some of our congregation, concerned about their safety, called upon the Lord with a whispered prayer for protection. Others, preparing more temporal security, were thinking about calling the police. We don't normally treat visitors to our church with such suspicion, but Ken, he was a portrait of menace. Dressed totally in black, his arms and face covered in crude self-inflicted tattoos, his studded trench coat made him look like a goth vampire. And some of our congregation weren't too keen on giving blood. His rage was further confirmed by his tattooed knuckles. On one hand, a single word that began with an F was scrawled, and on the other, to complete the abusive greeting, was the word "you." That was Ken's lifelong message. An angry drug abuser had spent more than half of his life in jail. He was infamous in our community, his face permanently twisted into a snarl. He only came to the church because someone dared him to attend. "You're so horrible, you should try church," they'd said. Hardly a warm evangelistic strategy, but it had worked. Ken sat at the back, absolutely determined to be unmoved, and later confessed that in his living memory, he'd never, ever cried. Who knows what horrible childhood traumas had smitten his tear ducts with a lifelong drought. But then, little Marge Sample showed up, silver-haired, elderly, and with a smile so huge. Little Marge was on a duty as a member of the welcome team that morning, and she boldly strolled over to where Ken was sitting, his arms folded defiantly. "Hello," she chirped. "I'm Marge. I don't believe we've met." She rested her hand lightly on his studded shoulder. Marge was somewhat taken aback by Ken's immediate, violent response. Burying his face in his hands, he suddenly exploded into loud wailing. This was no penitent whisper. He howled. Heads turned nervously. Ken sobbed his way into the kingdom and became a Christian that day because the emotional damburst was triggered, quite simply because no one had been warm and welcoming to him for a very, very long time. It was a simple gesture of kindness that unlocked a man who'd been imprisoned by hate for decades. Ken started to attend church, and his enthusiasm in worship initially caused a few raised eyebrows because when he raised his hands in praise, people three rows back got a rather unexpected message from those lifted knuckles. Eventually, he decided to have that lettering removed by laser surgery. A doctor in the church volunteered his time, and we took an offering to cover other hospitalization costs. The amount that was needed was the exact final total of the offering, another small miracle. Standing in the baptismal tank with his hands still encased in post-operation plastic bags, he thanked the congregation, his face beaming. He held up those hands. "Now the outside matches the inside," he said. "I'm clean." Ken's life was totally transformed and his conversion stuck. Sometimes it doesn't take a lot to change everything. Marge passed away some time ago now, her sparkling eyes now just a memory, at least for the time being. But she's living proof that small acts of kindness can trigger revolution. And who knows? Perhaps after she passed, when she found herself in the presence of a heavenly welcoming committee, another someone, his name Jesus, one with hands wounded, not by hate, but by love, stepped forward with a smile. Three resolutions to consider: to be kind, to be welcoming, and broadly, to live each day for God's glory. Decisions to live like that in God's strength and power will surely lead to a happier new year. See you next year.
Lucas on Life.